Thank you all very much. This is really an embarrassment of riches tonight. And I have to say, that was the most eloquent introduction I've ever been given. I'm going to address this crying issue later in this talk. And I can't believe it's already happened, but I have Kleenex here, just in case. Thank you to the alumni board. My admiration goes out to my fellow recipients, and I've been humbled many years at these events by the incredible accomplishments of DePauw graduates, and I'm tremendously honored to be among all of you tonight. From almost the earliest age I can remember, I had a dream of a liberal arts college. I had a dream of a liberal arts college before I knew what a liberal arts college was. I remember riding to Earlham College as an eighth grader and misspelling the name of the school. I don't know where this came from, but by the time I was in high school, I was the de facto college counselor of Quincy High School. The actual college counselor was also the track coach, and he had one catalog in his office, Western Illinois University. My shelves were groaning with college catalogs. I had painstakingly written every one, but by the time I was approaching my senior year, I had narrowed it down to three that seemed to fit this abstract idea. Mind you, I had never been to a liberal arts college, and they were Amherst College in Massachusetts, I think because David Eisenhower went there, Carleton College in Minnesota, and Grinnell in Iowa. So my parents, we got into the station wagon. My parents hadn't been on a college campus since they were in college. This was 1969. I'm sure many of you remember what it was like in 1969. We got to Carleton College. At 10 o'clock in the morning, we were given a tour of the men's dorm. We went in. There were some guys sitting around in the living room, and one of them offered my father a joint. We were in the car on the road to Grinnell in 15 minutes. So we come through the cornfields of Grinnell. We couldn't even get to the admissions office because an anti-war protest was underway. The tour guide was obsessed with the experimental rats that she was killing in the underground lab. That was the end of Grinnell. Needless to say, I never even got to Amherst. The Northeast was in flames in anti-war protests. And basically, I had no plan B. Carleton was out, Grinnell was out, Amherst was out. And fortunately, my cousin, who is in my same class, Sarah Wilson, whose brother, my other cousin, is here tonight, was coming to visit DePauw, and I decided to go along for the ride. I remember arriving in Greencastle. I got out. I saw East College. Guess what? This was my dream of the liberal arts college come to life. I had never seen it before. It wasn't just a physical appearance, although I love the way this campus looks and feels. It was the warmth of the people that I met here. The students who said hello, the faculty members who wanted to talk to you about what you wanted to achieve here, the admissions officer who was as concerned about whether DePauw was good for me as whether I was good for DePauw. It was a revelation. I fell in love with DePauw that day, and I've never looked back. My experience at DePauw was what we talk about every day here that we hope to achieve for students. I'm not going to dwell on the details, although I could go on at great length, because I had incredible experiences here that have shaped the rest of my life and for which I'm eternally grateful. But in the interest of brevity, I'm going to jump ahead to a chapter in my time with DePauw that I didn't expect to happen. I sort of didn't understand why they called graduation commencement. Wasn't it the end? Wasn't this the end of the 4 years? Why is it a beginning? And I didn't know that I would ever be back to the DePauw campus once I left here. But some years later, Bob Bottoms, who had kept in touch with me for various reasons, floated the idea of being on the board of trustees. I didn't know exactly what that meant, but I was flattered. I was interested. I agreed to join the board, and I always remember my first meeting. I had not been on any kind of board before that, and Jim Emerson took me under his wing the very first meeting, and he said, there's something I just want to impress upon you. He said, this is how I think of DePauw, and this is how I think all trustees should think of DePauw. The first thing I think of when I wake up in the morning is DePauw. He said, and The second and the third things I think of when I wake up in the morning is DePauw. And I thought, can this be real? And I looked at him, and I said, yeah, this is real. And then I'm thinking of other people that had such a tremendous impact on me here. Dick Locke and his wife, Judy Locke. Judy Locke threw her arms around me. I walked in the Walden Inn. I don't know that I'd even met them. And I was telling her the other day, they've been like my second parents ever since. The warmest, most loving, accepting, kind people I could ever hope to meet. And these board meetings were absolutely extraordinary from day one. Now I'm going to get to the crying part. There's something about DePauw that touches the mind, touches the heart, and touches the emotions. Now, I know grown men are not supposed to cry. I don't have the excuse of being Irish. I'm of Scottish background, which I think you're supposed to be extremely stoic. But I have found that the longer I have been involved with DePauw, the more readily I seem to cry at various events. I've worked my way through any number of Kleenexes today. I had to borrow one at the memorial service for Dick Locke today. And rather than keep fighting against this all the time, I've decided, you know, it's just time to embrace this and to try to understand it. And I've been thinking to myself, what is it about this that makes me cry? I'll give you an example. We were nearing the end of the search process. Brian, Dr. Casey, has indicated that, you know, I reached out to him, but it was a long, thorough, arduous process with a great deal of stress, of suspense, of important decisions to be made. It was one of the greatest experiences of my life. The closeness that the search committee developed, whoever would have emerged at the end of the process, was an extraordinary thing in itself. And one of the extraordinary things about it was this was an activity in which you couldn't just keep saying the familiar platitudes about the great things about a liberal arts education and the values and the ethics and the courage to make the right choice. This required people to really do it. And I think deep in my heart and in my mind, I wondered, was DePauw going to have the courage to make the right choice? Were my fellow trustees, some of whom I knew reasonably well, others I didn't know all that well. I'll never forget the experience with trustees like Tim Ubbin in this process. And I didn't know Tim Ubbin all that well. I now feel so close to him and fellow members of that committee, because in the end, they did do the right thing. They did have the courage. They lived up to the ideals that DePauw espouses. That's the kind of thing that makes me cry with pride. You see why I brought the Kleenex. So we reached the end of the process, and there was an elaborate procedure. I think there was going to be a vote on Sunday or something, but Dr. Casey was here on the campus Friday night. We were on a conference call. I was in New York, and I believe it was Tim Ubbin who said, well, why don't we just go ahead and vote now and get this over with? And the vote happened. It was unanimous. Dr. Casey was the choice. It enabled the people who were here on campus to actually greet him and communicate this momentous decision to him while he was still here. But I have to tell you, when the vote was over and Dave Hoover, the then chairman announced that it was a unanimous vote in favor of Dr. Casey, as far as I could tell, I was on the phone so I didn't see all this, the entire committee burst into tears. And I, like, because nobody was watching, I just like lay down on the floor and sob. And my partner, who's here tonight, Benjamin Weil, came rushing over to me to see what the matter was. I said, no, you don't understand. I mostly cry when I'm happy. I've been giving some thought since learning I was to receive this award about why I would be crying like this about events related to DePauw. And I think it goes to something that's very profound in our society, in our culture, and that has gone throughout history. We've learned that we're born as babies longing for unconditional love. We start wanting it from our parents. I don't know anyone who ever got it from their parents, but maybe some have. We long for that. We go through life longing for unconditional love. One thing I've learned as I've gotten older, and partly through my service to DePauw, is we're never going to receive unconditional love until we can give unconditional love. And there are not many places in this world, maybe there are none, where we truly achieve this elusive goal. But there are a few where we may come close. And for me, DePauw is that place. So here I go. I'm not going to lay down on the floor. Let me reassure you. But I want to say that this has been one of the greatest experiences of my life. And I'm deeply grateful for this award. But I want to assure you, you didn't need to give me this award. I'm absolutely thrilled to have been a part of this great university, of the young people that continue to be educated here, of the wonderful friends who are in this audience tonight, of the talented faculty who've made such an impression not only on my life, on everyone else, the administrators, and I'm so excited about the future going forward. So just like I always thought commencement was an ending, it was a beginning, I'd like to think I may be a little young for this old gold goblet. And to me, it's a beginning to an exciting new chapter in which I hope many, many more people achieve the excitement, the thrills, and yes, the love that I've experienced at this university. Thank you.